Welcome back to another edition of Fox on Sports. I am your host, Lauren Fox, and for the next hour or so, we're going to discuss football, high school sports, and the art of hitting with some very interesting people. We'll be joined by Greg LaRocca, who is a former Major League Baseball player, also played at West High back in the day. And Greg is a hitting coach in town now with his own baseball barn. Some great approaches on hitting, as well as just an overall passion and love of the game. So Greg will join us. He's one. We're also joined by Coach Derek Stank, who is the Bedford High football coach. He will talk to us about their upcoming matchup against Winnicunnet in the first round of the NHIAA playoffs. And last but not least, we are joined by our most frequent guest, Corey Parker, the athletic director at Bedford High School. So as we're recording this show, it is the morning after the Major League Baseball World Series has concluded in seven games. One of the most exciting World Series, at least that I can remember. Didn't go to sleep on Monday night until about 1:40 in the morning. Was in bed for about 10 minutes, and then the power went out. And I know that most of the town lost power for some point, and some people have not gotten it back as of this recording. So, of course, it's been a challenging week, to say the least. But there was no shortage of power during the World Series. That game Sunday night into Monday was a 13-12 final. You would think that with Clayton Kershaw on the mound for the Dodgers, one of the best pitchers alive, one of the best pitchers, if you're looking strictly at the stats, ever to take the mound in a Major League game, you would have thought with the Dodgers up 4-0 and 7-4 that everything would have been safe. But in this tiny field that is known as Minute Maid Park down in Houston, seems like just about any of us from the Men's Softball League could probably get it out of that place. I'm exaggerating, but it is a small field. And of course, no lead is safe in that ballpark. The Dodgers gave up a 4-0 lead, a 7-4 lead, and finally came back to erase a deficit in the top of the ninth before falling 13-12 in 10 innings. A nail-biter of a game, but certainly makes it tough when you got to wake up on Monday morning on about 3 hours of sleep, try to get a generator working. Doesn't make things too easy. So some things that you wonder about within Major League Baseball. Starting the games at 8 o'clock, even on a Sunday night, which in theory is a good idea. It's 5 o'clock on the Pacific time zone. But for some of us who are out here, and particularly when you're talking about, you want to make this game accessible and you want to get kids to love the game and have idols and pay attention to what's going on. An 8 o'clock start on a Sunday is tough because I know for a fact by the time the game starts at 8:20, which is when it actually starts, my kids are in bed or close to it. And there's not a whole lot of opportunity for them to watch the game. They might hear me downstairs here or there, but they're fading out. They're not staying in and glued into the action regardless of who's playing. The other thing is, it just seems like within a World Series, you might want to mix in a little bit of day baseball here and there just to give it that old-time feel. But right now, these 8 o'clock starts, and it's compounded by the fact that you have pitching changes within the inning, a significant amount of them. You have a lot of mound visits. You have some times when it looks as if the pitchers don't want to pitch and the hitters don't want to hit. Guys are stepping in, stepping out. Can really add to the amount of time that's required to play these Major League Baseball games. And consequently, you play a 10-inning game that lasts for about 5 hours and 20 minutes. There is nobody on the East Coast that's going to be watching that game, at least anybody that's got anything important to do the next day and wants to be somewhat coherent. So Major League Baseball, you have a little bit of work to do here. You're trying to build this game. You're trying to grow it. You're trying to get more kids to play it and get more people to be fans of the game. But it really makes it difficult when you're starting the ball game so late. And I understand, of course, on a Saturday, you're going up against college football. On a Sunday, you're going up against the NFL. But this is the World Series. This is your showcase. This is your time to shine. And I understand, of course, these TV contracts are massive. They're not in the millions. They're in the billions. But what can be done to make this game more accessible for kids? I'd love to hear any and all feedback on that. I mean, my thought is you start the game earlier because it is a Sunday and you do need to get people the opportunity to watch those games. Because if they're not watching those games, the next morning when they're at work and they're standing around the water cooler, standing around the coffee maker, They might be talking about it because they've seen the highlights on SportsCenter, but they didn't get to enjoy all the drama that went into it, for better or for worse. So certainly something to think about. And we will be joined momentarily by Coach Derek Stank, who is the Bedford High football coach. So take a listen. We'll be right back after this. We are back on Bedford 105.1, and we are joined by Bedford football coach Derek Stank, who has seen some up and downs this season. It's coming off a year where the team won the state title, Coach. This one hasn't quite gone according to plan, has it?
No, it's not gone according to plan, because obviously you want to be 1-0 every single week.
Right.
But at the end of the day, this game is filled with sudden change. And, you see it on the football field. How do you respond to a fumble, an interception, a touchdown? And in the game now, we've seen it throughout the course of the season. Where we've had some sudden change. We've had some injuries. We've had some losses. And we've had to respond. And fortunately, we've done that. And I think we've put ourselves in a position now that those three losses, they don't really affect the playoffs at all. They just affect the past. So.
Right, and you're in the playoffs against the team this week. You have a chance to avenge a loss from early in the season. You lost to Winnicott at 20-8. What did you learn the first time that you played them that you can apply the second time through, I guess, that you can share with us?
Yeah, simplistic stuff. At the end of the day, we did not take care of the football. We lost the turnover battle. So, right there we were negative two. We had two interceptions in the end zone. And you're not going to be successful against a good team if you make big mistakes. Next thing is we lost the big plays. They were able to get those big plays with their running backs out of the backfield, and we got bit on the play action, and next thing you know it's a touchdown or the option off the edge, and we didn't keep contain and touchdown. So they had the big plays, and I don't think we had one play that was over about 15, 20 yards. So we've got to try to win the big play battle. Next thing is the field position. Once again, like I said, elementary stuff, the field position. Their kicker was able to give us pretty much a touchback every time. And the one time it wasn't a touchback, we bobbled the return. So, they put us in a position. We had to go 80 yards before we got into that end zone. So we'd go 60 and end up stalling out with an interception or a turnover or down. But we just we didn't quite execute on the fundamental parts of football, keeping the drives going, winning the turnover battle, getting good field position, and ultimately finishing out. Because we finished that day with 300-plus yards of offense, and we had a total of 8 points on the board. And, I think that's something where we've got to be able to finish the drives in the series, and we've been focusing on that ever since that game.
And it makes it tough, too, when somebody has that good special teams unit and you constantly feel like the field is being flipped on you. Like 60 yards, you pin somebody deep, you have a good opportunity to set things up nicely for yourself on defense, and the next thing you know, you're back kind of rolling the boulder uphill again.
Yeah. Yeah, it's never a good thing to be starting that far deep. And that's why specials play such a big role at all levels. And when you have a high school kicker that can put it in the end zone on a touchback and punt it and turn the ball 40, 50 yards difference, it really makes a difference in the flow of the game. So, that's something we have a decent kicker. We've got a guy that's had a couple touchbacks in the last couple weeks. And, our punter's been good for the last year and a half. So we just need to make sure that we're executing when we get those opportunities to try to flip the field ourselves.
Of course, if all goes well, you won't see the punter much at all. There were times back in the Chip Kelly Oregon days that you wondered if Oregon even had a punter, but not always a luxury that everybody's got. We are joined by Coach Derek Stank, the coach of the Bedford High football team, and going into the playoffs this weekend, like we mentioned, you have Winnicott. They are the one seed. You guys are the four seed. Consequently, that means you have to travel out there Saturday. What kind of preparation do you do the week of the game to make sure that the team is ready to get out there and be firing in all cylinders on Saturday afternoon?
First and foremost, you have to go into your game week like you usually do. You have to follow that routine. I'm a big believer that football is a routine-based sport. You've really got to go out there. You've got to set the structure, the standards, for how you want to practice. So we've got to go through our regular practice, whether it's home or away, whether it's one seed or 10th seed. We've got to take care of the fundamentals from Monday all the way through to Friday pregame. Then when it comes to playing on the road, you know, you've got to be ready to go to someone else's house. I think the fortunate thing is we've played these guys already at their place. You know, that's a little bit of an advantage for us versus if we played them at our place and then had to go to theirs, which is an unknown facility for us because we don't typically see one kind of that often. So being in their facility already, being on that field, you know, watching the highlights from afterwards on, you know, the New Hampshire Sports page and other things of the other team celebrating, you know, ultimately, you know, we've been there before, and now we need to come out with a different outcome when we go there next time.
So looking at the season, and of course, when we talked last, the team was 2-0. There was a lot of positive momentum at that point in the season. A lot has changed since then. The number one thing as an outsider for the program is the injury to the quarterback, Connor Robert, which a spiritual leader, guy who's been with the program sometime. This is his senior season. Of course, Thomas Morgan stepped in and he's done well. How do you, as the captain of the ship, get these guys when there's an injury like that, particularly to somebody significant, how do you get these guys to rally around the new guy and kind of, it's almost like the Patriots will say, next man up, but it's not that easy.
You know what? It's not theoretically that easy, no. But the motto and that saying and the mindset needs to revolve around that. We are in a sport, all sports are going to have injuries, but we're in a sport that's inherently risky. And there's just guys that go down. It's just a part of what we do as a program, as a sport. So, you know, I think that mindset, first and foremost, is key. If someone goes down, it matters for that individual, but it doesn't matter for the game. The game has to keep going. And that has to be a mindset that's established in the coaching arena and on the player arena and with the whole program. So I think that's the first thing that we've kind of always done a good job of here, saying, hey, next guy in. You know, someone goes down in the field, we're going to move the drill, we're going to keep going, you don't stop. Not to say we don't care about the individual, not to say our heart doesn't go out for him for a serious injury, but at the end of the day, for the sake of the game, you've got to have that mindset of it keeping going. From an actual, you know, just strategical standpoint, how do you deal with that? It takes some time. You know, we put Thomas Morgan in there, and we had to go play Goffstown, and it was not an easy road for us because we weren't quite ready as an offense. We weren't quite ready to see that sort of a defense and be firing on all cylinders at that point. But we, I think, have evolved a lot. You know, Thomas Morgan, he's done a great job of stepping in. We've done a good job, I think, as coaches of maybe simplifying some aspects of the offense, removing certain things, focusing on the strengths that we have, our offensive line, some of our run game aspects, and trying to take a little bit more pressure off of him. But he's done pretty well. You know, he had a really good passing game against Dover. I think he was 11 for 13 for 210 yards, a couple touchdowns. And last week he struggled a little bit more. But at the end of the day, he's still holding this rope, you know, and still holding the ship together because, you know, there's a lot of other guys out there. And the quarterback is a key component. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, the kids are behind him. The kids realize that, hey, he's the next guy in line, and they see that he is pushing and working to get better. And at the end of the day, this is where we're at. So you got one or two options. You deal with it or you give up. And, you know, giving up is just not in the cards. So we're going to push forward with whoever we have running the ship and do our absolute best.
I love the attitude as far as, hey, there are two options. There's two options in life in general with things like that. With anything. You can either fold your hand or keep playing. And you've hit on a number of things in this conversation. And we're joined by Bedford High football coach Derek Stank. A number of things that are going to be valuable for these kids who, when they're done with football season, whenever that happens, and when they're done with high school, when they're done with their football careers, these things are going to be important to them. And it's the importance of a routine and a successful routine, not just a routine for routine's sake. The fact that there are going to be ups and downs with anything, whether it's college, whether it's a job, whether family, you name it, there are going to be ups and downs. And there's also the fact that anytime you're doing anything, you have a choice. You don't have to settle for whatever you're doing. You need to make the best of whatever possible situation that you can. How much of that kind of, I guess, self-help type stuff, how much of an impact do you put on that day to day, week to week, as far as the players, or is it just an artifact of, hey, this is what we have to do to keep going as a team?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it definitely is something, you know, it has to be coached and it has to be taught. But I think that's the beauty of sports. Sports put people and individuals in places that are not easy. And life is not easy. So, you know, we constantly make the reference about the fact that you're going to learn things from playing this game that's just not going to get anywhere else. And they're going to help you in all facets of life. They're going to help you with your relationship with your wife someday. They're going to help you with your job and keeping your job and being disciplined on it. So, you know, we constantly, as educators and teachers and coaches, we're trying to help these young individuals realize that there is a bigger picture out here. Because at the end of the day, they're not going to play in the NFL. They're not going to go make a living from this sport. But some of the things they learn from the sport will allow them to make a living and be successful. You know, I was fortunate enough to play for Coach Mack at the University of New Hampshire for 5 years, and I got a lot of good coaching myself. And this is where a lot of this stuff comes from. You know, we're not reinventing the wheel. We're using the principles that we need to be successful in life, and we're using them to help be successful in football and vice versa. So at the end of the day, yeah, the ship, we got to keep going. You either give up or you don't. And, you know, so we were faced with some injuries. We were put in a bad position. We've had some losses. We were put with our backs up against the wall. And it was, if you lose, you're done. You're not going to the playoffs. But at the end of the day, that's what life is sometimes. And we were able to respond. We're putting ourselves in a good position. And, you know, we're fortunate because we get another opportunity to try to rewrite the past. And that is, we're going to go play Winnicott again at their place. And this time, hopefully, it's a different future.
Right. And looking at it, you have a number of players, skill players, who have stepped in. The offense appears to be firing on all cylinders now. It's putting up some good stats, some good numbers. You have a quarterback who has gotten comfortable with his role. All of those things put together, and there's always a chance that you could surprise somebody, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we can surprise a lot of people out there, I'm sure. But in here, inside this wheelhouse, you know, we're not going to be too surprised. And it's not to take anything away from any other team out there, because there's great football in all aspects. And at the end of the day, if we don't play our brand of football, if we don't execute, we don't take care of business, we're not going to win. It's pretty simple. You can't win a football game against a good team unless you play good football. But we know if we come out, we execute the fundamentals, we take care of our job, you know, we feel that we have a good opportunity to surprise the other people and satisfy what we think we are capable of.
Well, I'll tell you what, the town is rooting for you, and the football team is lucky to have a guy like you and your staff believing in them, working hard with them every week. Like we talked about when we spoke a few weeks ago, this really is, it's more of a full-time job than your full-time job is.
Sometimes it is. I wouldn't want to put that on record necessarily, even though I'm live on the radio. But at the end of the day, yes, it requires a lot of time, and you know, and I'll do my job as a wellness teacher. But sometimes in the fall, it does tap into some of those hours throughout the course of the day.
But with anything like it, if you love it, it makes it much easier. It's much easier to put in the hours, and when you take the obvious pride that you do in the development of the players, development of the program. That gives you some very intrinsic value that I'm certain helps you day to day with your enthusiasm level when you're teaching too.
Absolutely. It's a rewarding field. It's tiring and it's stressful and it puts a wear and tear on you. But at the end of the day, you know, the memories that you get from the sport are, you know, they're pretty special, and you don't get those many in all other facets of life all the time.
Well, Coach Derek Stank of Bedford High football team, we appreciate the time. Hope to talk to you very soon after a solid performance on Saturday. We'll see what happens, right?
All right. Thank you very much for having me.
Any given Saturday. Thank you, Derek. Talk to you soon.
All right.
We are joined on Fox on Sports by Greg LaRocca, who this may be a familiar name for you if you've been in town for a while, played at West High, played at UMass Lowell, and is known for the fact that spent some time in the major leagues and in Japan as well. So, Greg, thank you for the time.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So the subtext and the things you don't find out, I guess, until you really ask the right question, you go back and you look at your career and the time that you spent in Japan, and you go back and you look at Yu Darvish and the time that he spent in Japan, you say, wait a second, these two guys were both playing in the Japanese Professional League at the same time. So you ask the question, hey, Greg, did you ever face Yu Darvish? And this, I guess we are recording this on Thursday morning right after Darvish put up his second of two kind of marginal, to be charitable, World Series starts. But the answer was yes. And you look at a guy like Darvish and the stuff that he's got. I mean, during the regular season, regularly striking out double digits. But apparently you had his number back in the day.
Yeah, he was a class act. I mean, he came up in his first game. He almost threw a no-hitter against us. So his first game when he was 18 years old, he played for Nippon Ham. And he pitched really well. We were on an all-star team together and couldn't be a better guy. He is absolutely such a class act. I was pulling for him. You know, he did struggle a little bit. But when I faced him, we always tipped our cap to each other, and we respected each other. And he is really one of my favorite guys over there, as well as good pitcher. So I was pulling for him last night, but too bad.
And you look at everything that went on with Gurriel, the first baseman for the Astros, and the kind of outcry that went out after his racist gesture against Darvish. And Darvish's reaction to it was about as great as you would expect it to be, just wanting people to be human, get along with each other. If we can learn from this, if we can improve from this and be better, we'll create a better world, a better life for our children. And they asked, hey, do you feel like he needs to apologize to you in person? And Darvish said, no. We're good. Like, we'll take care of it. And everything seemed to be taken care of. And what really, to your point, what could have been a huge outcry and one of those stories that never would have left ESPN turned into something that was almost more of a non-story simply because of how Darvish was willing to put it to bed, which really does show that the guy's a class act.
Yes, completely. Completely. That summed him up in a nutshell. I mean, what a great guy. Never, ever did he show anybody up. He, you know, obviously he's competitive, and so he does show emotion, and I have no problem with showing emotion. You know, it's when you show up other players, that's when I have a problem, and he was the same way, and I'm telling you, he handled that. You're right. He handled that, and he couldn't have been any better. Just class act, and that's why I pulled for him. That's why he's a good person as well as a great ball player.
Joined by Greg LaRocca, who is the owner of the Baseball Barn, which, if you haven't seen this place, I walked into it and I was like, wait a second, this is paradise. It's a barn on basically almost the Bedford, New Boston border. Greg gives hitting lessons there, shares wisdom about the game of baseball. You work with a good number of young players. How many are you working with at this point?
Man, it has been, I mean, this year, I just started it up this year, so I was scouting for Japan, the last team I played for 6 years. And it started to get into a full-time gig where I was traveling, you know, 60, 70, 80,000 miles a year. And it was just getting too much. And so I did this on the side, just a few people. I was having fun with it. And all the parents were like, you got to do this full-time. You got to do this. And I'm like, I don't know. Is there enough people to do it? And boy, was I wrong. There is a huge market here. I mean, Goffstown is huge into baseball, and I have a lot of kids coming from there. The team that made it, I was working with them over the winter for a couple months. And then, you know, I work with all the Bedford teams, and I probably, this year, easily over 100 kids I've been working with.
And that's, it's fun to watch them improve. And of course, I've seen it firsthand with one of mine going in there, and the approach that you provide to the kids. And it's one thing to teach the mechanics of hitting and, okay, this is how you actually hit a baseball. It's another thing entirely to teach approach. And coming out of Game 7 of the World Series, where you look at a guy like Cody Bellinger, who had a great regular season for the Dodgers, 39 homers, looked overmatched against those curveballs, and in some ways was going up to the plate with, it seemed like more his approach was broken than his mechanics were broken. How important is it to teach a good approach to these kids so that they know what to do when they're standing in and what to look for and where to look for it?
I think it's everything. I think that's why I made it. I mean, my stature, I'm a shrimp. I'm a nothing.
You're a giant. You're a giant next to Altuve. You realize this?
Maybe not. Yes, but the idea that my stature was not something. And Altuve he's something special. I mean, he steals. He can steal, 30 bases a year. You know, he could be a 30-30 guy. Or I couldn't run that fast. I mean, I'm not that good. I mean, there was nothing special about me. I was good at everything, and I didn't master anything. So my approach, my mental approach, I said outside I was small, but inside I'm a mental giant. And so that's where I used. And I said, well, if this guy's going to do this to me, then I'm going to hit that, and I'm going to look for that, and I'm going to hit his pitch that he's trying to throw me. And so that's where I can take these kids and teach them, okay, these are how to hit all these pitches. This is how to hit this. This is how to hit that. And then when you go up to the plate, what are they trying to do to you? So you pay attention. So I teach not only, like you said, the mechanics, but I also teach when you're on the bench, you want to pay attention and you want to see how they pitch all other players. And then, are they going to pitch you that way? And the more and more you pay attention, the easier and easier everything gets. And that's where the kids that I'm working with in high school, I work with them when they're younger, and now they're hitting home runs because they start to say, well, I went the other way, and now this is going to happen, and now I'm going to look in, and I'm going to look for these pitches. And then when you look for them, that's where power comes from. So power, I think, is something that is kind of you mature into. So yes, you could be strong and you can hit a home run here and there, but consistent power is something that, if you're allowed to mature, and some of these younger kids that get in the big leagues when they're young and they can get by, like Cody Bellinger, now he's going to learn, well, hey, I'm going to learn how to hit that slider. Yep. And so all he has to do is hit that slider once, and then, we can't throw that all the time because he can sit on it. And so that's when the game becomes cat and mouse game. I'm looking for a fastball in. Well, I'm going to throw you a fast slider away, and then back and forth. And so these guys are looking for these pitches, and then you see them. The pitchers can't just keep throwing. You can't overpower somebody with a fastball, even though you're throwing 97, 98. You catch up to it. So you have to mix up your pitches. And in his case, he was, well, they're going to throw me a fastball. I know they did it 39 times.
Yeah,
and I guess they didn't come back to it, so they were smart. And yeah, he's got to make adjustments, and that's more mental than it is anything else.
We're with Greg LaRocca, hitting coach here in Bedford, who has worked extensively with kids kind of all ages at this point. Coming out of this World Series and coming out of this baseball season, more home runs this season than any other, more home runs in this World Series than any other. They're stat upon stat. The Astros hit more home runs in the World Series than any other team ever to play in a World Series. Is this where the game's going? We saw it, and it's funny to watch things change. You look back 10 years ago, that was Moneyball. It was on base percentage and making things happen. You look 5 years ago, it was defensive runs saved. And the Royals winning a World Series basically by putting the best defense they could out there and scrapping and scratching for runs. And now what it looks like is if you have guys 1 through 9, if you have Springer at the top, McCann at the bottom, or Jock Peterson hitting down at the bottom and Taylor at the top, if you have a guy 1 through 9 who can hit the ball out of the ballpark, that's your ticket. It doesn't give the pitcher any kind of a break at all. Is that where the game's going, or is this just a natural evolution, and in a couple of years, we're going to be looking at something else?
I mean, yeah, of course you want power all the way through your lineup, you know, like it's like an all-star team. So you have an all-star team for your regular team, and you are way ahead of everybody else because you need defense on there. You need the shortstops, and you need the middle infield has to be strong. But now, you know, middle infielders can hit. So, yeah, to find somebody that does both is important. You know, so I think, you know, part of my scouting brought me, you know, and I introduced our front office with Oryx to half the team. So I wrote all the GMs, and Jeff Luno was one of the guys that we wrote. And he is, you know, he definitely did his homework. They did all that. The TrackMan is a missile guidance system that, you know, some company bought, and they put that behind the plate. And that's where you see. So when you're watching Fox and you see somebody's route and they take a route and they're like, this ball, the exit velocity was this was that. That is that machine. You know, it's called the TrackMan. That machine is gives you all that data. So filtering all the data is something that some teams didn't know. And we were looking in Japan for something to help us. And, you know, the Astros and Jeff Luno kind of did his homework on me and said, oh, and I actually played with both of the managers. And so it was cool because he kind of knew who I was and I was asking. And so he was saying, hey, well, we'll help you out, get started on the TrackMan. We'll put it in and we'll do this. And I learned a lot about how much homework they did, and they are leading by far. They were head and shoulders above every other team, and this World Series showed it. So they really did a good job. I mean, it also helped that they lost and had 100 losses and got to get some first picks that could help them. But they did homework on those first picks, and they weren't busts.
Right. So, well, and the guys that they were getting with those early picks weren't I guess the mental makeup of those players is different. When you take a guy number one overall, like Carlos Correa, who handles himself like he's 10 years older than he actually is, that's a big win. You're not going to have to worry about, you know, you hate to bring up names, Matt Bush, you know, along those lines, the guys who really struggle with the fact, okay, I was the number one pick and now I feel like I've been let off the leash. You know, some of these guys that the Astros got, the Springers, the Correas, these are the guys who are the leaders of the franchise, but they comport themselves appropriately as well. And so you're not just drafting for a physical skill. You're also drafting for a guy who will handle himself in a proper fashion.
No, you got that. And that's where that mental plan that we're talking about, that's where that comes into play. The guys that use their brain are the guys that excel in this game. Yes, it's great that you have physical skills, but if you have a 10-cent head and $1 million body, that's going to drop that $1 million body down, and you're going to underperform rather than overperform. So yes, that mental psyche and the buildup of who they are is so important. And I think of all the teams, I think they all do a very good job in looking for certain things, but the Astros are complete, and I think that they're looking to be, you know, leaders for years to come. I think that you can look for more from them.
It'll be interesting to see. Now, joined by Greg LaRocca, who I will refer to you as a baseball man, spent his life around the game, as the reigning expert in the Bedford zip code on Japanese baseball. The name that has been brought up, and I first read about him in Sports Illustrated a few months ago, Shohei Ohtani, the Japanese Babe Ruth. Have you seen him play?
Yes, I have, and he is legit. He is all that in a bag of chips. So he's going to be the next guy. The question is, when is he going to post? So nobody knows when he's going to post, and posting is a system where it was just altered a few years ago, where the teams from the United States get to bid on him and say, so the team says, okay, we're going to post him. After 9 years, then he becomes a free agent. So the team chooses to post him, you know, 8 years or sometimes seven. or, you know, but they want to use them up as much as possible, and then they get money from them. And so it's, you know, it's $50 million, $30 million. I think it's now it's $30 million, and all the teams get to negotiate with them. And so they pay the Japanese team. So to say the Red Sox went in, they paid $30 million to the team, and then they get to negotiate. And so, but now they do it so all the teams can bid. So anybody that has $30 million can go and pay the team, and then whoever negotiates gets to win the bid. So he's a guy, he's legit.
Would,
you know, so
what would you do with him? Because he's been very productive as a pitcher, but the guy can hit for power. He gets on base. What do you do with a guy? It obviously makes him more appealing for a National League team than an American League team, you'd think, unless if you're the American League team, you're pitching him one day and DH-ing him the other four.
No, I don't think. I think National League. I would expect him to be at National League. I think that's way too much. I don't think he's there. I don't think. I think he could hit. But he'd have to – pitching and hitting are – I think that's way too much strain on him. Even though he's young and he can do it, I think the best thing he would do is be a national team. And now that the Dodgers won, I think they would be high in the running because they're going to compete. You know, they have a great base right now. And to add somebody like him, I imagine they'd be going after him fiercely.
It'll be interesting to see. So it was a fun regular baseball season. We hope that we can catch up with you again in the off season and hear a little bit more about hitting and potentially get some previews going into next year. But Greg LaRocca, we appreciate the time.
All right.
Welcome back to Fox on Sports. We are joined by our most frequent guest, Corey Parker, but that's not because we're just trying to fill time. It's because he always has something good to add. And, you know, I mean, honestly, it's also because I have barely slept in the last week with the stupid World Series. Games ending at 1:30, 2 in the morning, you know, that doesn't really help when it comes down to it. So did you catch any of that, by the way?
You know, I watched a few of the late evening games. It actually created a more productive evening for me as I was watching those, and I had the laptop up so I'd be able to get some work done. First and foremost, my condolences to you. but certainly excited for Houston, that town, what they've gone through over the last couple months. It's, I think it's kind of fitting for them to have a celebratory moment.
Well, it kind of feels like when the Saints won it after Katrina,
sure.
It's the
yep.
same sort of vibe. And yeah, I mean, you hit it right. Like, I am lifelong Dodger fan, have gone through more ups and downs. I mean, I was sitting there like white knuckling it on the couch the other night, and I as much as you want to have this, you're so used to the Yankees and the Red Sox, and I have to hate the other guy, and with this I'm sitting there watching it going, I really like these guys. Like, Springer plays hard. He hustles every play. He's playing like it's his last. Altuve is 5'6" and hits the ball harder than guys who probably are twice his weight. Like, there's a lot to like about that team. And then when there's the whole backstory about Houston that goes along with it, yeah, it's hard. It's on one hand, yeah, I'm disappointed. It would have been nice to win, but on the other hand, it's great to have that group doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, all right, well, we'll get down to business here. So, a lot of stuff going on. It's playoff season for fall sports. Football has Winnicunnet Saturday at Winnicunnet. That's going to be a tough one. Today, which we're taping this on Thursday, it is the Bedford High girls soccer team taking on Exeter down at Stelos in Nashua. And, of course, by the time this airs, that will have long since reached its conclusion. But let's hear it. What's going on as far as the fall playoffs are going?
Yeah, it's certainly exciting. You know, we finished off cross country last weekend with the divisional championships, with the teams finishing about middle of the pack in Division One. Girls soccer had a great win on Monday versus Nashua South in the quarterfinals, 2-0 to advance to today's semifinal against Exeter. I think if you've been following Division I soccer on the girls' side especially, it seems like every year Exeter or Bedford are dueling it out to advance to the finals or competing in the finals. So there's a great natural rivalry there amongst two real quality soccer programs. So today at 4, we take on Exeter down at Stellows Stadium in Nashua, and should be a great game. Weather looks friendly for good environments as far as kids being able to play and hopefully reach their potential. And should be a fun one. And then certainly, you know, football, exciting couple wins down the stretch here versus Dover and Central to put themselves in playoffs. We had a great crowd last Friday night on senior night. Ultimately, a play-in game with the Central Little Green for the final playoff spot. Fortunately, we were able to have a great second half in that one, advance in that game. So we traveled to Winnicunnet on Saturday at 3 p.m. To take on the top seed Winnicunnet Warriors. Played there earlier in the year on a Friday night. Heavy fog, mist game. It was very remnant of Hampton and what comes in with the tide sometimes. And it was a unique environment, to say the least. But I know the boys are really excited about kind of getting back there and hopefully fulfilling some of those drives that ended in turnovers in the end zone, and hopefully play hard and have a different outcome.
It's tough. When we talked to Coach Stank earlier, there's a lot of life lessons that come out of everything that he's doing with those guys. And with this, it's, hey, you have an opportunity to go in and surprise some people, but it won't be a surprise to us if we're able to do it. We know what we're capable of. And he certainly is an enthusiastic, positive force for those kids out there on the football field.
Yeah, high school sports, and I think in a lot of years, the upsets in football are few and far between, considering other sports where there are teenagers that have to play with confidence, have to buy into it, and ultimately have a good day of participating. And I think football this year, nothing to discredit. Certainly Goffstown, very fine team, Winnicunnet obviously undefeated. But you're exactly right. I think the coaching staff believes in our student-athletes, and the kids believe in themselves, and hopefully they can put that confidence with a couple big plays and be there in the fourth quarter to compete and hopefully try to get victory. I think as coaches, we strive to put kids in those situations where they can be successful. And ultimately on Saturday, specifically to the football team, or tonight for the soccer team, that's our goal.
Joined by Corey Parker, the athletic director of Bedford High School. And it when you are that age and when you are out there on the field, it makes a big difference, not only if you believe in yourself, if you feel like you have a coaching staff that believes in you, but if you also have a fan base that is there and vocal and is engaged in what's going on. And we talked about it off the air. There are some groups that are working to put together some programs designed to get a little bit more school spirit going on. So I guess elaborate a little bit more on that.
Yeah, happy to. Certainly, I think our crowds at the Friday night or Saturday night football games speak for themselves. Tremendous turnout of students at those games. Very involved. Very much creating a home field atmosphere. But one thing that we're striving to do and working with some of our student leaders here at the high school is bring that energy and excitement over to all our sporting events here at the school, and not even just in athletics, in attending the play or Model UN or First Robotics, really trying to create an atmosphere of school spirit across the board. And it's been exciting to kind of start the process with a lot of these upperclassmen leaders to hopefully engage them and get creative and center some marketing and promotions to really bring a lot of people to the games. And I think for a lot of students who just simply haven't been to a field hockey game or haven't been to a volleyball game, they don't realize what they're missing until they're missing it ultimately. And so the kids have had some great ideas about a punch card system to kind of ultimately take attendance for fandom with our student athletes, with incentives, with spirit t-shirts or super fan type paraphernalia that hopefully will just continue to catch them and hook them more and wanting to come to not only sporting events, but certainly the play performance, any kind of band opportunities or anything the school is doing that's promoting our students' involvement. That's kind of what we're striving to do. So we've got a group of students that we've met with, we're meeting with leaders of co-curriculars, including FIRST Robotics, a band theater on Monday, in hopes of kind of getting all groups on board to support this for the greater good of the entire school, not specific to one team.
And what you're talking about is solving a problem that has always existed. I think back to high school, we would get crowds, I'm guessing, probably about 2,000 out to football games. And for our baseball games, when we're ranked in the top 10 in Orange County, California, there would be tens of people out there at the games. The only time when we had a crowd that was even remotely close to anything they got at a football game was when everybody thought there was going to be a fight between us and a rival high school. So they've certainly stepped it up a notch. And if they're able to do something like this and kind of create that level of enthusiasm among the student body, now it makes your job easier as far as recruiting kids to get out for other sports as well, because they feel like there's something in it for them and there's a little bit of enthusiasm that goes along with it too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as a student athlete, looking back to my days, and certainly I think anyone listening would agree, when your peers are there supporting you, it's much easier to get up, to get excited, to be ready to play, to want to do your best when the bleachers are full, rather 10 to 12 people of parents being there, and it's not that environment. And so, you know, much like in practices and in games, we want to create the best experience for our student athletes who commit to them. And I think fans and support at those events can certainly enhance that environment.
Joined by Corey Parker, the Bedford High Athletic Director. Now, you mentioned something else that has taken place in some of these games, and it's funny. It's almost gone from, hey, we're just rolling out the ball and giving you guys a field, to now this is marketing, and now this is almost like a microcosm of what the colleges and major leagues will do. You mentioned Tackle for Hunger, and that took place last Friday night at the football game against Central. Talk a little bit about that and what kind of positive impact that the community at large can have simply by bringing something with them to a sporting event.
Yeah, it's such a great cause that their community stated with MUR Sports really kind of spearheaded a number of years ago. And I would probably say 90% of high schools that offer football will adopt a Tackle Hunger game, where they are simply raising awareness, most importantly, but also getting people to donate non-perishable food items at the football game. And along with those lines, there's donations of financials, cash donations accepted as well, to team up with a local food pantry so that the food gets directly provided to that community. And it's something that Jamie, I know, puts a lot of time and energy in and connecting all the dots. Certainly Hannaford was instrumental in it in donating $250 worth of goods to our school, and our student athletes were able to go out with a gift card from them, start off the kind of campaign by getting a lot of food donations. We are lucky to meet with George Reese from the Bedford Community Pantry that is at 4 Church Road here in town. He and I met, and it was really beneficial because through this project, we were able to raise 746 pounds of food at the game last Friday night. That certainly is going to benefit the pantry immensely. And it sounds like Bedford, I think sometimes people necessarily aren't thinking about there's families in need, and there certainly are, much like every town, where people are possibly on food stamps or needing food for the weekend to support when they're not in the building getting free and reduced lunches that are provided by the school district and the state. And so these donations are ever-growing, and something it's important to know and to promote and utilize the sports environments where we're able to attract and generate a lot of interest and a lot of people in hopefully promoting them dropping an item or two or a couple bucks to go to a much greater cause than simply just coming to cheer on a football game in this case. And we're really excited in working with George. We're going to really kind of formally implement this into our winter season at our home basketball games, where we currently do not charge for games. We're not going to charge, but we're going to really promote hopefully having theme nights where it may be peanut butter and jelly on a certain Friday versus Pinkerton, and really try to promote it to both school fan bases to to realize, guys, we don't charge at home games at Bedford High School, but instead bring a large 16-ounce thing of peanut butter or jelly or a non-perishable food item that we can directly benefit families in need here in our community, and organically kind of work it that way, and also spread awareness at the same time. So it was something we successfully did within 68 hours at my previous school, and talking with the basketball coaches and some of the team parents, they're really excited about kicking this off and bringing this to Bedford through the winter season.
Well, it seems like that would be something that's very well received in this community, and there are a lot of terrific marketing channels that you can use in this community, moms groups, Facebook, things along those lines. And of course, it's something that whenever we have you on, we're more than happy to discuss it with you and push it out as well. But, you know, the single biggest thing that people will always complain about with something like this is I didn't know about it.
Yep.
They show absolutely. up at the game and they see other people handing in peanut butter and jelly and wait a second, how did I miss this? So, you know, whatever we can do to help you get the word out about it, more than happy to assist with that, because it is a noble cause. And hopefully you look at, this is always a bad time of year for mm-hmm. food banks and food pantries. Just simply because people are focused on living their everyday lives and they forget that those who are more fortunate or fortunate kind of will tend to forget. And this is the time of year that a lot of people can be a little bit hungrier. So, hey, now's the time for those of us who are able to make the contributions that we can to help somebody else's lives. And you guys are providing an avenue for people to do that, which certainly helps out. Hey, you're having the games anyway. You might as well do something else with it, right?
Yeah, it's exactly right. Certainly the holiday season, although it's hectic and busy for many, I think it certainly warrants and reflection as to not all families can provide the same level. And so if this is an outlet that we're able to generate through interest and excitement specifically for coming to a sporting event and create some more positive to that to our community members that may need some of those items, we certainly want to do so. It's, you know, with all our teams, it's fabulous opportunities to represent your school and play and wear a Bulldog jersey and enjoy the sports you play. But I think this speaks volumes to the big picture of life about the opportunities that we, you know, the real world learning experiences that our kids want to have and ultimately make them better individuals for society. And if we can do a little of that through athletics, I think we're moving in the right direction.
Well, we appreciate everything that you're doing. Corey Parker, the athletic director at Bedford High School, as always, thank you for the time. Look forward to talking soon.
Take care, Lord.
Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. I am your host, Lauren Fox, and just wanted to take a brief moment, thank our guests from the day. We've had a great show. Derek Stank, the coach of the Bedford High football team, playing at 1 o'clock Saturday out at Winnicunnett in the first round of the NHIAA Division I playoffs. So thank you to Coach Stank. Best of luck to the team. Of course, it's a single elimination playoff, so it's a tough one for them, but they have had a great week of practice and preparation leading up to the playoffs, and Coach Stank is confident, and certainly the town of Bedford is behind you and behind your squad. Also joined by Corey Parker, the athletic director at Bedford High School, and Corey is one of our most regular guests on the show, but always has something new to add, and this week the stuff that he added to us, talking about ways that the athletic program is trying to get more students to games, and also ways that they are trying to get a little bit of goodness and well-being within our community. And that was completely poorly stated, but really what they're trying to do is use sports as a vehicle for good, which a lot of people do that. But what they're trying to do is make it so that you show up at a basketball game. We don't charge you to come to the basketball game. Bring a jar of peanut butter, bring a jar of jelly, what have you. Different weeks will be themed differently, and they'll just use that as a way to collect food for the food pantry. So great to have a guy like Corey back in town who is very committed, not just to the athletic programs, but committed to the development of the students who are in the program and the overall health of the community as a whole. So, Corey, as always, thanks to you for joining us. And then also joined by Greg LaRocca, who you might not know the name Greg LaRocca, but you probably should. Greg is a guy who lives in town, has his own baseball barn, which as a baseball fan, it is absolutely paradise. He's got some nets in there, does hitting lessons out of there, not far from where I am. So super convenient just being able to jet across 101 and go see Greg at the baseball barn and get some lessons for the kids. But Greg shared some wisdom on Japanese baseball, hitting approach, and the next Japanese Babe Ruth, a gentleman by the name of Shohei Ohtani, who's the tender age of 22. So as always, thank you to our guests. It's been a pleasure to have Corey, Coach Stank, and Greg all on the show this week. A lot to go over, and we appreciate you joining us as well for it. So for the gang here at Bedford 105.1, just wanted to say thank you. My name is Lauren Fox. We will catch you next week on Fox on Sports.